so much interest on the part of the public. We would like to get through the bill as quickly as possible and vote on motions as well. Both of our bodies are on recess, and so we would like to try as best we can to get done by about 1:30, just so people have a sense of where we're going to lay the land this afternoon. We'll start off with introductions of our conferees and staff members, and then we'll dive right into the bill. So I am Representative Frank Hornstein. I represent District 60B in southwest Minneapolis, and I am the chair of the House Subcommittee on Transportation Policy and Transit. And again, want to thank everyone for being here, particularly the staff and the conferees, on this very, very busy day. So thanks again, everyone.
I'm Steve Murphy. I chair the Senate Transportation Committee, and from the beautiful community of Red Wing.
I'm Billy Ball, and I work for Senator Steve Murphy.
I'm Kelly Russell, and I also work for Senator Steve Murphy.
Ann Rush from New Hope.
Jim Carlson from Burns O'Regan. I'm the vice chair of the Transportation Committee.
Mike Jungbauer, lead Republican on the Transportation Committee, vice chair of Airways, Waterways, Railways, and from the beautiful city of Dodging of Deer, East Bethel.
Beth Crane, legislative assistant for Jim Carlson.
And the,
I was just going to say
Ms. Boyd and Ms. Berzowski will be here shortly, and that's our council and fiscal analyst.
Susie Maher, I'm committee legislative assistant to Representative Bernie Leader and House Transportation Committee.
Connie Ruth, Owatonna, Waseca.
Mike Nelson, Brooklyn Park.
Melissa Hartman, Brooklyn Park and Coon Rapids.
Shelley Medora, Apple Valley, Burnsville, also Vice Chair of the Transportation Policy Committee.
Dan Gain, DFL, House Quantitative Research.
Corinne Zewers, House Fiscal Analyst.
Matt Burris, House Research.
Abby Mann, Transportation CA.
And we did have, in case you're wondering who that bearded gentleman is at the end, Representative Terry Morrow has joined us at the table. He's been an active member of the Transportation Finance and Policy Full Committee, so he's going to be again participating as he sees fit and appropriate. And we really value his expertise and appreciate his taking the time on this very busy day. Yes, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, just for the folks that are in the room, you know, we all know that this room is pretty cramped. There's not enough chairs for everybody, so we're going to try to make this go as fast as reasonably possible. But the one thing I will ask is let the committee pages do their job. They've got to pass handouts out, and let's try to have some orderly feast when the amendments and other things become available.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. So just to, in terms of some procedural issues, when we were putting together this bill over these last few days, it was very important for both Senator Murphy and I that we that the bulk of the bill be items that the House and Senate have already agreed to, that you know, were not particularly controversial. Where there were some items that had some controversy, we did our best to try to bring various parties together, at least exchange ideas and language. On some provisions, I think we were able to succeed. There might be one or two others that remain difficult to find consensus on, but you know, it is our job to move forward with our vision of what this policy should look like, but we did make every effort to try to bring parties together where appropriate. So again, I think the bulk of this are provisions that people will be very familiar with because they're in both bills, and where there are some differences, we'll certainly have council and staff walk us through those. So if you had any additional thoughts or comments on the process.
Nope, did a good job.
Okay, well, do we have our Senate counsel is not here yet.
Ms. Berzowski will be here in a few minutes. There were, when Representative Hornstein and I talked a few minutes ago, we noticed that there was a couple things in here that didn't quite turn out the way that we had anticipated, and so Ms. Berzowski and Ms. Boyd are working on a couple language changes for us. They'll be here shortly, and we'll get her taken care of. Maybe Mr. Burris can start walking us through what's in the bill. So, and Mr. Chairman, if you allow me the liberty, Mr. Burris, if you can.
I hear that.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we can have this. Okay, well, maybe, Mr. Burris, maybe you can highlight the provisions in here that were maybe a House only or a Senate only. We agreed on, you know, adopting the like and similar language, and that's pretty standard for conference committee fare to kind of pick up the pace a little bit. But if you could kind of walk us through what the two differences were and where they're at in the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, there are several things in the bill that, as you mentioned, are common to both, and in general, those have been included in the CCR HF 1351 delete all amendment, and that's what I'll be speaking to. Jumping into the provisions that are from one source or another, but what weren't in both, there are some modifications to MnDOT data practices. There's some provision changes for eminent domain. Jim Overstar Causeway is established. Met Council is allowed to use that design build method with some clarified language on how that would work. The jurisdiction of Metro Transit Police is expanded. There is a requirement for MnDOT to perform pavement life cycle cost analysis on certain projects. A couple of task force established. One is congestion reduction, another is airport funding that's traveling a couple of different bills. There's a requirement for Department of Public Safety to do a credit card payment study to look at paying for various things like credit card. There are a number of changes to special license plates that is a Department of Public Safety provision. There's an appropriation to of the remaining money in the World War II Memorial Fund. There is a feasibility study required for rail transit in the I-394 corridor. There is a requirement on adding to MnDOT's STIP regarding corridor congestion relief on certain trunk highways. There are a couple of transit passes that MnDOT is given authority to issue. There's another report on internet-based driver education, examining the feasibility and effectiveness of doing that. There are a couple of different changes to recreational combination vehicles. I can get into those. Actually, on all this, I can get into more detail as requested by the committee. There are some changes to a couple of permits relating to truck weight provisions. That deals with forest products, bales, agricultural hay, expanded weight limits for hauling unprocessed agricultural products. There's another agency change on the registration tax. There is an exemption for charitable organizations from certain insurance requirements. New service signs for 24-hour pharmacies allowed on trunk highways. There's a change to town road abandonment expedite procedures. There are some additional provisions for MnDOT to take into account environmental impacts in its planning. Additional fines for pipeline violations. A couple of provisions relating to airports that are specific to a couple of airports. There's some changes to definitions of certain types of vehicles. Mr. Chair, members, that's a quick overview of some of the provisions that aren't common to both.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and committee members, earlier in the day, the Senate passed a lights on bill, and we had a provision in there that kind of settled down some of the controversy around a few issues, but the North Star project. And I was hoping that we could have just instruct staff to put that provision in this bill as well. I think that Mr. Schreiber is probably here and could clue us in on what that exactly means. But sometimes it's best to have things traveling in two bills, not knowing which one may survive the day. And I think that this amendment is important to the North Star project. If Mr. Schreiber could you come to the testifying table, please?
Chairman?
Please. Mr. Schreiber, proceed.
All right. I'm sorry, I was at the edge and didn't hear the inquiry.
Senator Murphy has a question.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schreiber, we spoke briefly and we talked last night about the amendment that we put in the lights on bill.
Yes.
And we want to put the same amendment in here. If you could explain to us what exactly that amendment does. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, the amendment comes from the Department of Finance, and it relates to federal funds and encumbered state funds to handle the cash flow for the North Star Commuter Rail project. And it was not something that we thought we even needed, but Finance has looked at it and said we need some fine-tuning to make sure that this works with the federal funds to handle the cash flow. I don't think there's any controversy to it whatsoever.
Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding. If there's no controversy in it, then if you'd allow me, I'd just make the motion to have staff put that same language in the bill.
Okay. Is everyone clear on the motion? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Schreiber.
Thank you.
Okay, I see all the councilors are conferring here, and we'll just continue on with the overview.
Mr. Chair, I was done with the quickie version. I can jump into details or ramble.
I would thank you. Well, by the way, let's give Mr. Burris a round of applause and all of our council. They've worked really well, especially late into the night last night and early this morning. So again, a big thank you. Ms. Boyd as well, we really appreciate your work. Ms. Berezovsky, did you want anything that you would want to add in terms of an overview? Should we just dive right into the substance here?
Mr. Chair, unless you want to hear more about the identical and similar provisions that were adopted, but otherwise,
I think we can move on. Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe Ms. Berezovsky might have a couple of fixes for the bill to make it look like what we've talked about, because we had, I think I stated earlier that there was a couple changes that needed to be made in here that we didn't get them quite right the first time.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator
Rass. I also have an amendment that clarifies making one section of the bill consistent internally whenever you're ready for that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator Rass. That will help.
Mr. Chair, I've been asked for some amendments, but I don't have them in writing, but I can explain orally what they are.
Sure.
Okay. Let's see. In Article 1, Section 61, I think that is, it begins on page 46, but the relevant language is on page 48. And the discussion had been to remove that conditional effective date provision that's found at 48.6 and 48.7, which conditions the effective date on an increase in the gas tax. Take it from that section and insert it instead after sections 52 and 53, which are on pages 38 and 39.
Yes.
I understand that was the intent of of the authors.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Berezovsky, Can we go ahead and just make that motion to change, and then you can take care of it? Mr. Chairman, I'd make that motion.
Okay. Is everyone clear on what's before the committee? Questions? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. Let's proceed on the next.
Mr. Chair, on page 89, line 16, it's paragraph C under section 131, which is a repealer section. It says, if enacted in 2007, House File 946, Article 2, Section 1 is repealed. And I think the discussion was to delete that line. And what that line refers to is the up to 2.5 cent debt service surcharge that is part of the trunk highway bonding article in the conference committee report on the funding bill. And if this line is deleted, then everything stays the way it is right now, with that provision being in the bill.
Okay, questions?
I'm sorry, just which line, 16 or 17?
16.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, once again, Ms. Berzosky, if we just direct you to take, okay, I would make that motion.
Okay, is everyone clear on the motion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. I understand there's some additional amendments that Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, there are a couple that these could be distributed. The first one being distributed is a technical amendment that changes a couple of dates to be clearer and to match up with the rest of the language that the date goes along with.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the 858.
Senator Murphy moves the 858. Are there any questions from committee members? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, the next amendment being distributed is the 859 amendment. This contains a couple of clarifications requested by the Department of Public Safety. The first is to modify, if it passes, the lights on bill so that the International Fuel Tax Agreement sticker is a fee for two stickers instead of one. It's a column change that didn't get into that. The second makes a couple of changes to the registration tax effective date, and this is in the vetoed finance bill. If that were to become law, what this amendment would do is make it so that the effective date is immediate, so that people would not be able to pre-register ahead and avoid any registration tax changes between the time that this goes into effect and when the actual changes occur. There's a delay between when the bill is enacted and when the new registration tax schedule goes into place, and this would prevent people from being able to get under caps on new vehicles. And it would also delay implementation of that registration tax by a month to allow for the department to handle it's notification, a bit of a delay in the cards, the timing and programming when they send out this information.
Mr. Chairman, I move that A59 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves the A59 amendment. Is there any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, the third one is, I could finish writing up our here. I could just explain it orally. This one was something that was accidentally overlooked, or there was some miscommunication on getting this drafted. It goes to part of the effective date on a transit funding provision. This provision starts on page 66 of the Delete Everything. This provision establishes limits on operating and capital costs that county regional rail authorities can pay. And the amendment would be to clarify that these limits apply prospectively and not towards transit projects that are already in progress. Specifically, this would deal with the North Star commuter rail corridor. Mm-hmm. And so the change would be page 67, line 11, after the second period, insert subdivision 1 applies prospectively to transit projects that have not completed final design on July 1, 2007. And that would exclude the North Star from the caps that are established here.
Okay. Representative Portman, would you?
Mr. Chair, I just had a little concern about that date, July 1, 2001, because I know that we don't have our full funding agreement from the FTA, and I don't want to do anything that makes North Star in trouble if we get our full funding agreement, like, say, on August 1 instead of July 1. But if folks who are know more about this than I do have reviewed this language and understand it does not threaten North Star commuter rail in any way, then I'm supporting it.
Okay. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, maybe we can take a little testimony on this one just to make sure we're getting it correct.
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Schreiber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Schreiber, representing North Star Corridor Development Authority. The issue in the original language was whether or not it applied to North Star or whether it was only intended to apply to Central Corridor. It was our understanding, all of the counties have signed an agreement with the state of Minnesota, with the Metropolitan Council, committing 17% of the capital funds for the North Star Corridor project. And there was absolutely no intent on the part of the counties to back away from that agreement with the state and the Metropolitan Council. So the intent here is to make this clear that this is prospective language. It would have impact with the Central Corridor, but as it relates to the North Star Commuter Rail project, that the counties would continue to contribute their 17% as they have adopted resolutions and signed agreements to do.
Any questions of Mr. Schreiber? Thank you. Just wanted to check in with Representative Portman and make sure that
Mr. Chair, and you might not want to go too far away, Mr. Schreiber, my only question was about Hiawatha. I hate to even ask the question, but does this have any application to the Hiawatha Light Rail Line operating expenses?
No, this is on the capital side.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
You know, if we're talking about all these corridors, it may be useful. Thank you, Mr. Schreiber, to hear from the Met Council and if they have any thoughts on that.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome
Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shetland.
I thank you. I'm Judd Shetland with the Metropolitan Council, and actually, we are very happy to see this amendment go on as well. We have some concerns about the language overall because the council and the administration have said that there should be at least a 50% share of the capital costs on these projects. Obviously, the conference committee sees otherwise, but as far as where we're going with North Star, we appreciate that, and the Hiawatha project shouldn't be affected by this at all. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shetland. Is this clear? Is everyone on the committee then comfortable with this amendment or have any additional questions or concerns? Then I would move adoption of Representative Horton, do you have any? Okay. What's the, this is the A, Mr. Burris, A?
This is the oral amendment.
Okay, the oral amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And I think we can continue on. There's a few other, I think we've disposed, Senator Rest.
Mm-hmm. Shall I?
Your technical correction, yes, that would be appropriate.
On page 11, Article 1, Section 19, the language of lines 17 and 18 specifically excludes the services of consulting engineers, but then up in the language of 11, which is the intent, up in 11.3 and 11.4, that language that reads, including but not limited to pre-design design and preliminary engineering, then is inconsistent. And I've checked that with Ms. Berezovsky, and she agrees. So my amendment would be, after the comma on line 11.13, to delete the rest of the line, and then 11.3 to delete that, and then on 11.4, delete the language up until the word or. And then that would make the language consistent with the policy.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator Rest. Committee members, are you clear on that, or would the help of council repeated the...
would help.
Okay.
Help they repeated, yeah.
Council could repeat the proposed oral amendment on page 11, beginning on line 3.
On page 11, line 3, delete everything after the first comma. Page 11, line 4, delete everything before the first comma and the comma. So what would be the phrase that would be deleted is, including but not limited to pre-design, design, and preliminary engineering.
Okay, members, this is this relates to the provisions that have been promoted by AFSCME related to privatization contracts. This is, I think, what we're in this amendment. We're adopting some Senate language. Is that was originally in the Senate language? We didn't have it in the House.
Mr. Chairman, this is a provision that has been worked on by the consulting engineers and AFSCME, and as I understand it, there's no disagreement on the effect of removing that language to make the language that is in lines 11.17 and 11.18 consistent with the policy that was adopted.
Thank you for that clarification, Senator Rest. Is there any discussion about this? Again, there does seem to be some agreement from the parties, particularly the public employees, about this, so it should not be controversial. Questions, comments? So Senator Rest moves inclusion of this oral amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All
aye.
Opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Rest, for picking up that area of consistency. Are there any additional amendments? I think that Senator Murphy may have. Yes, Representative Portman.
I'm sorry to take us back to the A58, but looking at page 67, line 6, we're deleting the words "the date of the enactment," and those words are not in that page and line. And then also on the A58 amendment, the third line of that amendment, the language that we're theoretically deleting is not in that line. I'm sorry, I was asking a question of somebody when you guys were doing the A58.
Okay. Representative Portman, could you repeat that, and then we'll have council take a look at that.
Sure. The A58 amendment at lines 1.4 and 1.5 appears to refer to deleting language that does not exist in the draft of the bill that we have in front of us. But it may refer to a different section, and we just need a correction on the page and line reference.
Okay. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a typo, and on 1.4, instead of line 6, it should be line 8, and then... 1.5 instead of line 7, it should be line 9.
Since we adopted that amendment, do we need to move to reconsider, or can council make that change since this is typographical?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hartman, we just need to direct council to make the changes. I think what we voted on the 858 was the concept that just a low number is wrong and council can fix that. So I would move that council make that right.
Okay, so I appreciate Representative Hartman, you're catching that. Okay. So this is the Murphy motion then. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Were there any additional, if you have more than one Representative Portman, I don't know, was this the...
Did I have an amendment?
No, but was this the only sort of technical piece?
Yeah.
That, okay. All right. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, I was just given some language that amends the two sections that have to do with town road extinguishment or abandonment. And they're a little bit lengthy, but I'll read them off here. The first change is on page 13 of the bill, in the section that actually begins on page 12. But the change is on line 13.11 to line 13.14. It would delete that paragraph, and what this has to do with is the notice that a town board has to provide before it needs to extinguish its interest in the town road. So the amendment would delete paragraph C and instead insert not less than 30 days before the first meeting at which a resolution to disclaim and extinguish a town interest in a town road under this subdivision, I think we have to say, is considered. The town board shall provide notice of the meeting by certified mail to each property owner abutting the road to be extinguished. A notice must also be posted as provided under section 366.01 subdivision 8. That's the first part of the change. Okay, the second part of the change is in the second section that relates to the same subject. It's on page 88, section 128, and that is uncoded language that relates to the nullification of an expedited town road extinguishment. There are, first of all, a few technical changes on 88.8, delete is and insert was.
The first is or the second is?
The first is. I suppose we could make the same changes appropriate on the second is and put them both in the past tense. Line 88.9, after auditor, insert prior to 1972. Line 88.12, delete and then after 88.13, well, I guess delete the period, insert and then have a new clause 5, which would read, so this new clause is another condition that is placed on the nullification process that's set out here, and that condition is 5. A person whose only access to property was lost because of the extinguishment files a petition of nullification with the town board stating that the person's property became landlocked because of the extinguishment and that the road satisfies all of the requirements of paragraph A, clauses 1 through 4. A copy of the road order found filed or recorded with the county auditor shall be attached to the petition. The town shall file the petition with the county auditor and record it with the county recorder. Okay, continuing on line 88.14, after subdivision 1, insert and section 541.023, and then on 88.19, I think. No. At the end of 88.15, after the period insert, no additional damages or other payments shall be required other than those paid at the time the fee interest was originally acquired and the order filed with the county auditor. A cartway created by this paragraph may be converted to a private driveway pursuant to Minnesota Statute Section 164.08, Subdivision 2, and then delete 88.16 to 88.20.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think everybody knows what this issue is all about. There's one member of the legislature who has an individual, a constituent, who has a piece of landlocked land. Unfortunately, they can't get a hold of one of the landowners to get authorization to continue the improvement of this cartway into some sort of substandard road or path or whatever so that the constituent can get access to their property. My understanding is that from the township's perspective, what we have in the bill is a little overreaching and may have some negative consequences. The township proposed this amendment. It's very narrow, and it should take care of that one particular instance without opening up the whole township vacation of roads and such, without opening up the whole ball of wax. So I would move this amendment and hope that the House could kind of swallow that. This is my bill, by the way, and it kind of came back in your guys' in your guys' conference, or in your guys' bill, and we're just trying to fix it up so that we don't want all the townships in here because we create problems with the language that's in the current bill. I think what Ms. Berzoski just read off limits it to that one instance.
So, thank you, Senator. So, Representative Holberg, this has to do with a provision that Representative Holberg brought to us. I think the House feels strongly about keeping that in. Representative Portman.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I'm only the one House member that doesn't like it that much. I don't like when the legislature meddles in little disputes and tries to resolve them here at the legislature, I understand. I very much respect Representative Holberg, but I don't like this provision very much.
Representative Ruth.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate it. And we did have extensive discussion on it, and I think in this case, the poor fellow has kind of just gotten left in the shuffle, and it involves the DNR and everything, so it is a big issue, but it is something that we need to discuss.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and to that point, the DNR did some upgrades on this person's property, and the person didn't even know it. As a matter of fact, they built a bridge on it, and the person that owns the property didn't even know it. And now that person doesn't have access to his own bridge that the DNR built, so we're trying to provide access.
Representative Portman.
That's why we have courts of law that take testimony, and we lack a lot of information. I just wanted to note that for the record. I don't think this is the right way to resolve this type of dispute.
But I think members, Representative Portman and others, think we're able to address this issue in this bill, but I think with the additional language, I think we're also setting some limits with future cases like this. Is that, am I summarizing that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I make the motion.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails.
And Mr. Chairman, if we've got an issue with highway construction down in Rochester, and I was wondering if I couldn't bring couple senators to the table that have some particular interest in what we call the 65th Street interchange, or lack of 65th Street interchange.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome to the committee. This is an honor to have our senators from Rochester here. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
State.
You've heard much testimony in this committee throughout the session from the city of Rochester. I know that there's been a lot of discussion on this particular topic, and we are here today just to reinforce the issue at hand and ask for your support in helping us to resolve this issue that's going to really strengthen our capacity along this corridor, and we would ask for your support today.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein, I'm sorry, Senator Murphy and members. Senator Lynch is absolutely right. This I won't call it necessarily an issue, but this circumstance actually goes back to my city council days as we were planning for the long-term growth and development of the city of Rochester. That long-term growth and development has occurred a little bit faster, I think, than any of us ever expected, and particularly on the north side of the city where this interchange is located. I think to some extent most of you have been briefed on this, but it involves the need that the city of Rochester, the county of Olmsted, believe is essential to allow the north side of our city to grow from the standpoint of traffic management. I hesitate to get too far into this because I know time is short. But the governor has indicated to me this was of concern, I think particularly to Senator Murphy, maybe others. I don't know what the fate of this bill is from the standpoint of a veto. The governor has indicated to me that this bill would not be vetoed based on this particular provision. I didn't ask the other question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator St. John, I would have drawn much more comfort if you would have asked both questions.
We were on limited time.
That I understand. Members, when we had our conference committee on the funding bill, this was a huge issue, and we kicked it around and kicked it around until we beat it up pretty good. So the folks that are here that were on that conference committee know the issue really well. I don't think we need to discuss it much, but I do have an amendment here, and I don't know if everybody got a copy of it or not, but it deals with the Rochester interchange. I can read it orally, or I can pass the paper around, whatever. Okay, I'll just read it then. It just says the Commissioner of Transportation shall proceed without delay to issue the City of Rochester necessary permits to allow the city to complete construction of a newly folded diamond interchange in the northeast-northwest quadrants, marked Trunk Highway 52 and 65th Street Northwest in the City of Rochester. The commissioner shall review the environmental documentation prepared by the city in a timely manner and shall issue the necessary construction permits without delay upon issuance of a finding of no significant impact. And it goes on to say that the entire cost of 55th Street Northwest interchange design, right-of-way acquisition, and construction shall be the responsibility of the state.
Mr. Chair, what it doesn't say, but which is accepted, is that the interchange, 65th Street interchange, would be obviously at the cost of the city of Rochester.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's one thing I failed to mention, is the city of Rochester is committed to foot the entire bill on the interchange at 65th Street. Unfortunately, the reason why the last two lines are in there in this, MnDOT feels that there would have to be substantial upgrades to the 55th Street interchange in the price of, I want to say, $35 million or $50 million. In that ballpark to upgrade that intersection to keep the traffic flow at an appropriate level in that corridor. So that's the downside.
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, when we discussed this issue in the Transportation Finance Conference Committee, and MnDOT testified, and I understand the language, and I understand the City of Rochester's point of view, but they testified there was a significant cost to the state. They also testified that it got this project out of order from other projects. And considering the Rock 52 and the significant dedication of resources to that project already, it didn't meet with what MnDOT thought was fair. I just don't know that we have enough information to make a decision. And based upon what I heard from MnDOT, I just have grave reservations about doing this in this way at this time.
Representative Ruth, thank you, Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to hear from MnDOT if they would have something to add.
I did see Ms. Parker earlier, yep, and Mr. McFarland, and even Mr. Gray is here. It's an all-star cast from MnDOT. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. For the benefit of those who were not here for the Transportation Finance Funding Conference Committee, and maybe I don't need to say much because what Representative Hortman said was exactly our concerns about this, we would much prefer that this not be settled by the legislature. For one thing, it suggests that every time we have a disagreement with a local unit of government, that they can come to the legislature and not only change the order of projects or require the expenditure of money that's not planned for, but that they can dictate the design of things when we have specific concerns about this specific design and possibly others. And so those are, we've already talked about this some, so I'm not going to say much more than that. But I have talked to our district engineer since that last conference committee, and she has said to me that she has ongoing meetings scheduled with Rochester, and she's very hopeful that something can be worked out with the city within the next year or less. So it's something that's of great concern to the district, and they do have hopes of resolving it outside of the legislature in the near future.
Are there additional questions of Ms. Parker from any members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, then I would make the motion on the language that I read in regards to the 65th Street interchange.
Well, Senator Sendrum, did you want to add some additional comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, and I understand time is precious, but let me just say this. It's too bad I can't take you all down here to show you how logical this is. We're talking about putting in 65th Street because we want to offload traffic off 55th Street. I don't think the City of Rochester, while we understand that as time goes forward, there may be a need to address 55th Street, it is not at all currently at the priority level that 65th Street is. And if you live there, and if you drive there like I do, because it's very close to my home, you just instinctively know that if you can put 65th Street interchange in with off-ramps, on-ramps, that you are going to lessen traffic on 55th Street. You're going to allow our city to grow forward towards the north, which it will always do. It will always grow towards the Twin Cities. And that will lessen for a number of years, in my opinion, and I think the opinion more precisely of those that know better, and there are planning people and our transportation people locally, it will lessen, it will extend the time that this this committee, and for that matter the Department of Transportation, more importantly, will have to worry about 55th Street. So I would urge most heartedly your support on this.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And not having served on the Finance Conference Committee, I guess the question I have, how does this affect other projects that are going forward? And I guess Ms. Parker could come forward and maybe answer this. I know the project in my area that got canceled this year or pushed back this year that is probably just as dangerous as this, and I don't know if this, I know it's Metro versus outstate, but how is this going to affect overall projects in the state? Will this then delay other projects going forward? like Devil's Triangle that I'm specifically thinking about to be parochial.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, it's hard to say exactly what projects it would affect. Each district has an allocation, and the district is even now, and I believe for a few years in advance, still paying back money that it borrowed from other districts in order to do the Rock 52 project. So it is in the hole and repaying that money. This project would require $4 million for auxiliary lanes at the time the 65th Street interchange is built, and in the near future, the reconstruction of 55th Street. One thing they could do is take money out of their pavement preservation account. Unfortunately, they have the worst preserved roads in the state and need to leave that money where it is. So it does have a significant impact on them. As far as how it would affect other projects in the state, I guess it remains to be seen what comes out in the final bill as to how that would be handled. It is the sort of thing that could probably eventually be handled with an agreement in the district if the department and the city were left to their own devices to fix it. We're very concerned about the implications, in particular, of having the legislature dictate the interchange design when we already know that that is not a safe design for that location.
Are there additional questions? I just had a couple of brief comments I wanted to make on that. And I appreciate your testimony, both the senators and Minda. I appreciate Senator Murphy did give me a heads up about this, and I did have a chance to discuss it with at least the House members, some of the House members on the committee, and we, I think, strongly concur with MnDOT on this. You know, sympathetic as we are to some of the issues down there, you know, there is a process, and Senator Senjum, I will personally commit to you, and I don't know if any other House members want to come down and take a look at it personally, maybe in the interim, but you know, from our side, you know, again, with this additional revenue that's required and then again the procedural issues, we have some concerns about it. So I think at least several of us on the House would probably be, with all due respect, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy voting against this. But, you know, I do appreciate the discussion, and I certainly, you know, depending on what happens with this motion, I'll make a commitment to both of you to come down and see for myself what's going on.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just one last plug. As you know, I live in Red Wing. That's in District 6. And Ms. Parker just clearly stated for the record that District 6 has some of the worst pavement life cycle any place in the state. I mean, clearly 80% of our roads are going to need to be completely upgraded within 3 years. And most of us, especially Representative Swiggum, would tell you a road in particular in his district, which is part of my district, that should have probably been replaced years ago, because the locals that live there will drive 15 miles out of their way one way just so that they don't have to drive on that stretch of road. That's how bad it is. Down in Senator Sparks' district, there's a road where the county sheriff sits there and writes people tickets for driving on the shoulder because it's smoother than the road. We have some serious issues in District 6. And I know that if this was part of our bill, that it wouldn't improve the overall life cycle in our district. I'm still willing to do it for the simple fact that the city of Rochester is the hub in southeastern Minnesota, and it needs to be well taken care of. A lot of my constituents, constituents from other senators, Winona, Albert Lee, all work in Rochester, and I truly feel that Rochester needs to have this intersection in a transportation system that works for all of southeastern Minnesota. I'd be willing to give up some of my own money in my own district to make sure that this happens. But you have to understand that I'm one of about five or six, and probably the only one that would stand and say that other than the other two senators that are in the room from Rochester, so.
Okay, is there any further discussion on the Murphy amendment? With that, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Thank you, Senators, and as I said, I think I'm now on the hook for a trip to Rochester, so.
Thank you, members, for your consideration.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I hope you're not looking for services at the Mayo Clinic. No, I'm just joking.
Mr. Chair, we don't hold grudges.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one last amendment that I would like to make, and then a couple comments before we close up. But I do have an amendment, and Ms. Spierzowski, do we have enough to pass this out? Okay, if you could get her passed out, that'd be great. This deals with removing the cap over at the Center for Transportation Studies. And basically what we're saying on line 9.28 of this is that the commissioner shall spend at least one tenth of a percent for research-related activities at the Center of Transportation Studies. Right now, there's a cap on it at $80,000, and it's not supposed to go past that. We all know that the Center of Transportation Studies provides us with the information that we need to make informed decisions, and I think it would behoove us all to invest a little bit more money in that operation over there so that they can continue to pump out the good work that we depend on.
Okay, members, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the language that was just passed out in regards to the CTS.
Does everybody have the CTS amendment from Senator Murphy? Okay. All right, is there any questions or discussion? Representative Ruth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to hear from Minda on this. It seems like when we're saying at least, I mean, it first of all, it says we may set aside, but saying at least, so if we could hear from Minda, I would appreciate that.
The appropriate Minda staffer would be Ms. Barker, maybe?
May I see a copy of the amendment?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Betsy Parker from MnDOT. The department was aware that, has become aware recently that CTS was interested in having its cap lifted, but we are in the process of evaluating CTS contracts with MnDOT. In the last year, I believe they're receiving about $11 million from MnDOT for research, and we were hoping that this would wait until the next budget cycle for us to work on this together. It's not that we're opposed to funding CTS. We provide them a great deal of money now, but we were hoping that we could do this in the next budget cycle rather than right now. It's about an additional $400,000 a year out of the Trunk Highway Fund.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's about 300, Ms. Parker. Mr. Gray, sitting behind me here, says it's around 300,000, so. So instead of 800,000 going over there, it'd be 1.12 in that ballpark, million. And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Parker, you know how I am about waiting for anything. I'm sometimes not the most patient person in the world. And
Senator Murphy, I had never noticed that.
That's funny.
I quit. All right.
Well, we have to give you $300,000 just for that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just make the motion to adopt this language.
Okay. All in favor of the Murphy motion? Any additional discussion? All in favor of the Murphy motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Senator Youngbauer.
Mr. Chair and members, I have a couple questions on page 88 and 89. Trying to catch up and listen to everything and study the bill at the same time here. Starting at line 88.24, section 129, the Wilmer Airport. I don't know if anybody's here that could talk about this. This is an issue that's a perennial issue, or we see it every time we come through a bill like this, and I'm not sure. I don't have any problem with this language as it is stated today, because I think it's probably a good deal, because Wilmer's done a good job at building the new airport, but I just want to make sure it doesn't affect our FAA funds and being able to get that if we're not doing these fund transfers or potential land transfer the proper way. And the second thing we might, if anybody can answer the question, is when you get into section 130, this airport zoning exception, that's very troubling. We've heard a lot of testimony, and for those that don't understand, a safety zone A, that is the main zone at the end of a runway, and I'm really concerned about giving somebody an exception in law when we're worried about, especially with our MSP airport, the shrinking of safety zone A and the potential impact. Whenever we create something like this, an exception for one area of the state, we're really kind of setting a precedent for other things. And you know, I know we're trying to set some precedents because we need to direct things as legislators, and I'm okay with that. When it comes to safety at the airports, I'm really concerned as we change aircraft types that if we're allowing different infringements or actually forcing different infringements to rebuild, in this case, in a safety zone A, we are creating, in point of fact, a greater hazard. So I don't know the details about this one, but it's kind of troubling given the other things we're doing in order to promote our aviation. We've done a great job of that in the state of Minnesota. Well, so if anybody can answer specifics
on that. Thank you. Well, I'll make a little bit of an attempt at this, but I don't know if we have someone from Aeronautics, MnDOT, but a couple of these provisions were from the House. The Wilmer Airport is Representative Junkies, and his argument on the House floor was, you know, the just moving forward, this is a long-standing project. There's certainly economic development, positive economic development implications for all of central Minnesota, you know, by doing this. The second one was a Rokovina motion that passed on the House floor specific to the Eveleth Airport. And we had quite a bit of discussion on the floor about that. We have several pilots, as you are, and we look to them certainly in this situation, and Representative Beard in particular felt that the safety would not be compromised through this. But I certainly understand and recognize, Senator Jungbauer, that this is not something we ought to get in the habit of. You know, this was of particular importance, and it didn't seem like the structure in question was going to create a huge problem. So, you know, we accepted that, and I'm deferential to my House colleagues in really wanting to keep this in here. Senator Youngbauer.
Chair Hornstein, the airport zoning, if other people testify that in specifics at this issue probably wouldn't make a difference in a safety zone A, I could probably buy into that. The Wilmer Airport, when we start playing with, there's specifics on how MnDOT receives its aeronautic funds through the FAA, and then whether or not they get paid back properly, then those funds from the FAA then go through our MnDOT Department of Aeronautics. So if we do not pay them back and transfer them properly, we risk funding for all our airports. So I'm very particular on that one with the Wilmer Airport. The reason it's not passed in past years was the specific testimony about making a specific agreement that way that was potentially in violation of the FAA payback agreement. So if it's not done in specific language that meets all those criteria, we risk a lot of funds.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I share some of that concern, and it's certainly an issue that we've dealt with in the Senate Subcommittee on Railways, et cetera, Airways. However, the language is permissive, and so I feel in terms of direction to the Commissioner of Transportation. It doesn't say they shall enter into an agreement. It says they may enter into an agreement. So at least there's some discretion, even though there may be potentially a violation of the federal agreements if they did so.
Senator Youngbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair, and hopefully our Senate counsel might be dealing with this, but I'm wondering if there might be any way to just add a little provision in there, providing that this agreement would not be in violation of FAA regulations and jeopardize airport funding to any other airport in Minnesota.
I'm sorry, we're just a little distracted here. I apologize. Continue on.
Well, that would be my main concern, Mr. Chair, is if we could add something of a line in there that just makes sure that in this negotiation process, because I think it's worded pretty well, and I'm in favor of it, but I want to be sure. So if we could add something at the end of that, that it provided it's not in violation of FAA funding agreements and does not jeopardize funding for other.
So reports. This would be on
probably line
88.29. And then we're looking at line 28 or something.
Yeah, after line, to add language at the end of line 88.29.
Okay. Is there any discussion of this oral amendment from Senator Youngbauer?
Mr. Chairman, this has been a huge issue that's been running around here for about 4 or 5 years now, and that is the rub, is that it's the commingling of money and not having a clear line drawn between these monies, and the money that comes from the feds is contingent upon about 50,000 different things, and if you get crossways with them, they want to keep it. And I think that this amendment makes sense if we're going to keep the Wilmer Airport in there. You know, I was, when it comes to the airport zoning exceptions there on Section 130, the Representative Rukavina thing, I was not overly happy about that at all, but was willing to take it so that we could maybe close up this Wilmer issue. And if it's going to cause heartburn for one of my folks here, I'd like to have some comfort language in there.
Mr. Chair, I just got a notice from Ms. Parker from MnDOT stating that MnDOT Aeronautics is okay with the language, so I would draw any
option. Oh, well, then let's go.
Okay. Representative Hortman. Representative Hortman.
I just thought it balanced out the Representative Holberg section nicely.
Okay.
Right. But, Mr. Chairman, the Representative Holberg, even though it had my name on it, was in your bill. We didn't have it in ours. So.
I can't explain everything that happened to you.
I'm really good. I can get stuff in your bill.
Yeah. Bob Dylan says there's something happening here, but we don't know what it is. Okay, Senator Youngbauer, why don't you restate your oral amendment? It seems like we have some consensus around the table.
We don't need it.
We don't need it. If MnDOT Aeronautics is okay with it and they think it's gives them the latitude to be sure we're not in violation of FAA, that works with me, and I withdraw any opposition to the section.
Okay. All right. We're okay then.
We're okay. Good to go.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Spirozowski had some issue with an amendment that we passed earlier in regards to the truck weight. And I think that maybe we either need to take a 5-minute recess so that we can get counsel here and make sure that we've got it just exactly the way we want it. Or
I think that would be a good suggestion, because I think we're pretty much done with this bill, members, and we just want to get it right. Unless people had a couple of other
Okay, well, maybe we should do that first then.
Okay, so we'll do a transit funding amendment. Before we get to that, I think Representative Ruth had a question or comment.
Well, yes, I do have one section explained, but we can take the recess first if you'd like and come back. But
okay, why don't we do this? Okay, we'll take this transit piece from Ms. Berezovsky, then we'll recess it for about 5 minutes, and then we will very quickly vote, quick discussion, and then vote on the conference committee report. So, Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, this amendment and
Thank you to the Met Council people for pointing out that there is an inconsistency with something that was adopted here and the lights on bill that was just passed in the Senate this morning. And that would be in the transit funding on page 67, it's after line 11, and that's the effective date, and it was already amended once, having to do with Subdivision 1 capital costs to make sure that there wasn't a problem with North Star. As far as Subdivision 2, which is operating and maintenance costs, the suggestion would be to add a provision to the effective date as amended that says if House File 562 is enacted in 2007, Subdivision 2 is effective July 1, 2009, because the lights on bill has Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority paying up to $5.3 million each year to Biennium for Hiawatha Light Rail operating costs. So this would allow that to happen in the lights on bill.
Okay. Well, that seems like a useful addition.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that language.
Okay. Any questions or a discussion of the Murphy motion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, what I'd like to do here is just take a very, very quick 5-minute recess. We'll reconvene at 1:30 and wrap up the show. So don't venture too far. We've resolved the truckway issue, and now we just have one final. I'd like to address Representative Ruth's question. And
let's do the fix on the truckway.
Let's do the fix first. Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, a motion was made and adopted earlier in the conference committee having to do with a contingent effective date. It's found on page 48, lines 6 and 7, 48.6 and 48.7. And as a part of an earlier motion, that effective date provision was deleted. And the discussion has been to restore that effective date, so to insert, to reinsert the language on 48.6 and 48.7.
Okay. Is everyone clear on this? We're reverting back to what was in the original. Okay. Any questions? Representative Leader, you're okay.
No, I got a question.
Okay.
What I perhaps don't understand, you're leaving this in or taking it out? I'm looking at one that's got it in.
Representative Leader and members, we're going back to what was in the original draft today, which I think made the contingent date only for the heavier ag vehicles. Is that correct? The issue here was that the counties, the trucking group, and I think even the safety groups had come to consensus on that language, and so we wanted to honor those commitments. I hope everyone in the room representing that effectively.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Leader, basically what we want to do here is, if we're going to authorize heavier trucks to be out there, that we better have enough money to fix up the roads, because we all know they do damage. And so we're just asking that that effective date be, you know, sometime after there's an increase in the monies for transportation.
Representative Leader, I'm not a voting member, so.
Right.
I know where this is. Mm-hmm. I think, I'm not a voting member, I guess I can't. I shouldn't be influencing the group.
Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair and Chairman Leader, I very much appreciate your insight on this.
I think we all do. I think Representative Portman speaks for all of us.
We
wouldn't want to do a. On this issue or just in general?
You mean you allow me to speak with it? Yeah. I think it's a bad policy. I think we should leave it out. I don't think we should put that type of date in there for the simple reason that most of the truck weight language, which you know I normally don't agree with, has been a result of the trucks safety or truck steady group that they had for a couple of years. And I think if we tie this in, we probably would never see it effective if we never passed it. We probably couldn't pass a gas tax for 20 years or something. We'd never see it happen. And I wouldn't, normally I wouldn't feel comfortable with it if I weren't aware of the impact that's on the road. There's not that type of, but one of the portions that's less impact on the road with a new type of vehicle than it is with the old vehicles in the traffic study. So it's up to the planning, but I just, I think it would be better if the language were not in the bill for that reason. Because I'm concerned that there may not be a gas tax. I hope there was. I hope we override. But if it doesn't, we're going to be sitting, especially this in the truck weights for the agriculture. That was a sunset provision that was extended, as I believe. And one of the other truck weight things was basically a small change to comply with the federal regs. It went from 90,000 to whatever it was. I think so. Some of those are kind of innocuous in a way. It's not a big deal, but the one definitely on the ag products, that's just extending, I think, the ag products weight sunset, and this extended or took the sunset out so they could keep going. That was also true with the milk, I believe, too. I may be wrong, but that's just my comment. I guess I recognize that the Congress committee should make that judgment, but I'd just like to comment and thank you.
Any other questions or comments? I see Senator Murphy, you're studiously looking through some language here. Do you have any thoughts on it?
Once again, Mr. Chairman, when we talked earlier, I was having a lot of heartburn about taking on more truck weight without having some assurance that we were going to have money to fix up the roads. And Representative Leader's right that a lot of these vehicles that we're talking about with the extra axles actually do less damage than a standard truck that would have the same weight on it without the extra axles. We all know that. My fear is that the bonding bill was vetoed, had all that money for bridges in it. And a pound is a pound is a pound. We all know that on a bridge deck. And it doesn't matter if you have, six axles or 160 axles. It's still a pound is a pound is a pound. And without that money in the bonding bill or without added revenue through, some other avenue, I just can't see how we can continue to put bigger trucks out on the roads.
Would concur with my Senate colleague on that. Ms. Berezovsky, what would be the proper motion then to revert back to what our original language was?
Mr. Chair, I think it would be fine to just move to insert the language that appears on 48.6 and 48.7.
Okay. I move to insert the language that appears on 48.6 and 48.7. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. We have one final, Senator Youngbauer, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, when we took our little break, I talked to some of my aviation people and in MnDOT, and I'm going to move to take out Section 130 and renumber everything else. Members, the more you read through this, not only in Section A, do we give a variance?
Excuse me, members. I think we're talking about
page 88. I'm sorry.
89.
Not only are we given a variance to one structure, I'm told there's 12 structures in the zone, and paragraph B actually redoes the safety zone. Now, members, I don't know how many people are familiar with aviation accidents, but this is not a commercial airport. And a commercial airport, statistically, all commercial jets crash when they do on the extended runway in a straight line off the extended runway. When you're not running commercial jets, if something crashes in a safety zone, it crashes all over in the safety zone, and this is terrible, terrible policy to remove stuff from the safety zone and then grant somebody a variance in the safety zone, and this ought to be looked at. When we vote on something like this, we ought to have a picture of those structures. We ought to have an overlay of what kind of accidents happen on this type of an airport with whatever amount of operations they have a day, so that we can really make sure that we're not blanketly doing something that somebody's going to later on come back and sue the state of Minnesota saying, guess what, guys? You gave me the variance. The plane crashed here. You legislators are responsible. Or we redid the zone like paragraph D does. A zone, if you have a runway, I'm going to draw you a picture that hopefully you can see. If you have a runway and you have an extended center line, that's where commercial jets crash. The safety zone flares out on a standard airport, and they crash everywhere when an engine goes out on a general aviation airport. So what we're doing is legitimately in paragraph B, the way it sounds, is we're cutting off a section of that runway safety zone because we're saying, notwithstanding any other law or ordinance, we're not going to include any of the residential building lots. Well, without being able to see them, I don't know where they are. I don't know who's going to crash there, and I don't know that the state's going to be responsible. And that scares the heck out of me. We would maybe create an area where somebody can come back and sue the state of Minnesota because we as a legislature just redefined the safety zone without the statistical data or any other information members, and that scares the heck out of me.
We have a Jungbauer motion. Is there any discussion to the Jungbauer motion?
Mr. Chairman, can Senator Jungbauer, your motion was to remove Section 130?
Remove Section 130 and renumber the sections.
Okay. All right.
Is there any further discussion to the Jungbauer motion? Again, this was a House position based on an amendment from Representative Rukavina. And I'm sympathetic to some of the arguments that Senator Jungbauer makes, but I also believe that based on some of the testimony we had on the floor, that this is a relatively minor matter, and certainly it's not something that I believe should set a precedent for future safety zone exemptions. But with that, if there's any further discussion, then we should take a vote. All in favor of the Jungbauer motion signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
No. The chair is in doubt here. I believe we had a number of people that weren't voting, and it needs an affirmative vote in the majority. Is that correct?
Right. So on both sides.
The motion then would fail.
Division. I want to make sure, Mr. Chair, I go on record, if we do allow this and there's a crash and we're responsible, I want to make sure I'm physically on record that I voted to not allow this kind of change in a safety zone.
Division is called. All in favor of the Jungbauer motion, raise your hands. All opposed? The chair was correct, but I do appreciate the motion. So the nays have it, so this will stay in. I think there is one final outstanding issue, members, and that is Representative Bruce had a question just prior to our recess. And I believe, Representative Bruce, if you could reference the page and section number of your concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's on page 87,
okay.
Section 126. And I would move to delete Section 126. And we can certainly have discussion on that, and I'd like to have Linda come. But this looks to me like we're, we don't want to do certain areas. We just said we weren't going to do Rochester, and this looks like it's singling out a certain definite area within the 7-county metropolitan area. So I would move to delete that.
Okay. I think this is the Senator Jungbauer hour. Did you want to...
Mr. Chair and members, we did have some good testimony that we are singling out areas, and while I would love to bring this language into the bill, I don't want to have any veto bait in this bill, and I don't want to tick off any kind of working relationship with MnDOT. I disagree with how they might prioritize some things, but I would vote in favor of removing Section 126.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Ruth, and without going into great detail, because we're going to be out of here in about 5 minutes, but there are areas in the state where there are high crash intersections, and they create a lot of fatalities. Now, in the northern tier and somewhat in the western tier of the metropolitan area outside the 494-694 Beltway, there are some very dangerous roads. They have a lot of at-grade intersections. Now, Ms. Parker was up here earlier talking about the interchange that was trying to be built at 65th Street in Rochester. We decided, I believe, not to adopt that because of safety concerns. Meanwhile, the safety concerns all across the state, and especially outside the 49, in the metropolitan area, outside of the Beltway, the statistics continue to grow. And if you look at MnDOT's long-range plan, which is now a longer-range plan because it's a fiscally constrained plan, it's only going to get worse. And for my Senate colleague, Senator Jungbauer, and I said this on the floor the other day, it's personal. It's personal for us when we have to go to the funerals of kids that we know or other people that we know, families that we know. It becomes very personal. There's not enough money in the bucket to take care of places like Trunk Highway 65 and Senator Jungbauer's neck of the woods. There's not enough to take care of Highway 12, Highway 61, Highway 57. I mean, I can go right down the list. We need more money. And without having more money, I think that we need to direct the money that is available for us, if we're not going to have any new money, to areas of the state that have high fatality rates. And this addresses some of those concerns. Now, the only portion of this amendment that I kind of draw pause with are lines 23 and 24, but the rest of it is clearly designed to try to build some flexibility in MnDOT so that they can work with local units of government to establish the criteria that they need to fix some of these at-grade crossings that cause death. And, you know, I understand Senator Jungbauer's plea to throw it out of the bill because we kind of want a bill. But on the other hand, I tell you what, I'm in concrete. I'm set in my ways, and I'm going to vote no against that amendment.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Murphy. I certainly understand what you're saying. I'm probably more than anyone certainly understand the deaths. And you and I both have Highway 14, and we know how rough that is. And of course, we do have deaths there. So I'm also curious why it would say seven county metropolitan area, because we have we know that Highway 14 is the has been rated the most dangerous in 4 years. So. That would be my concern. So I would have a little trouble with that. And to me, that just really is binding MnDOT. I mean, that's what we do in the legislature. We don't put specific areas, obviously, because we have to trust that our engineers are doing what they're doing, and they're telling MnDOT what areas are the best to construct. And so I do agree with Senator Jungbauer that I'm afraid this would be pretty... tempting to have the veto pen come to it. I just don't think we can bind MnDOT's hands like this.
Senator Jungbauer.
I think, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate Senator Murphy arguing in favor of this. You know, the Highway 10 and the speed points of Highway 10 and Highway 65, I think, is still rated number one in crash cost, lives, and property damage. Highway 10 with all the at-grade intersections, and I think it's 20 years out in the plan and things. And I want to go on record as saying I don't believe in the priority that MnDOT uses. And sometimes I think by the time they get to something that's 20 years out, the priority list should have changed, but it was on the list, so we keep with it. And I know Senator Murphy and I have been talking about how to rearrange this language and how to bring it up to what we think belongs here today. So again, I don't want to be accused of, I guess, I don't consider it pork because it's necessary, and you know, we get all those when we start saying we want a specific project, people point to it as pork. But I think we got to keep on poking it out there and saying there's issues, here's where there's a specific issue, but I don't want to hold up the bill over something that's in my district and get the whole blame on me. So I think everybody at this table is willing to change the language to redirect some of the ways we rate the highway system, to redirect things and say, well, if it's on the list, that doesn't mean we're going to continue with the list if it meets a certain different criteria. And Senator Murphy and I have been working on that. And I think we're going to have a substantial bill next year that looks at a whole different set of criteria, at least on the top five crash cost intersections, crash cost highways. And so I'm willing to forego this, Senator Murphy. I'm like you, but I'm not quite as much in concrete. So I'm willing to forego this and push that direction with some different language next year, and whatever the vote happens, it happens. So.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have some concerns if we, as we go through the process, start changing the rules, having, as I said earlier, the project that was dropped so we get Kiowa Crosstown done this year, the project that sits in the corner of my district and partly Representative Portman's district, if we start changing the rules to have that drop off farther off the list, as what happened with 610 when other projects got moved forward and that one dropped to the bottom of the list. So I'm concerned if we're going to start rearranging this, that concerned that it's on our side of the metro area, that it seems that projects are always being done in the south metro area and the north metro area takes second place on when a choice is made whether to fund or not fund a project. But I understand your concern, and again, there's not a big enough bucket. We're trying to all get more money out of too small of a bucket, and that's the big problem here.
Directly to answer that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Youngbauer.
The kind of changes we're talking about would be directly related to death, and it's kind of sad to sit in Transportation Committee and somebody comes and says, well, we have this much death on our highway, and we look at statistics and say, well, you're number six. What are you sitting in front of us for? We can't even get number one through five funded. Mm-hmm. So we have a problem. We need to be able to change that. So the kind of changes we're talking about, Senator Murphy and I, and the rest of the Transportation Committee as well, are ones directly related to death and property damage. So we can physically direct things there in all of our districts. And coincidentally, a lot of that will either go to Greater Minnesota or the North Metro, because we don't quite have as much death and destruction on the South Metro. I don't think based on the ratings I've seen. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, I think we've beat this horse till it's dead. It looks like I'm going to lose, so we might as well roll it.
And I would just say, Mr. Chair, again, you were very helpful in giving me a heads up on this language. We didn't have it on the House side, but you know, I would respect the wishes of Senator Youngbauer and appreciate the comments of Representative Ruth. And so on this one, I think we'll be parting ways. I'll be voting with Senator Youngbauer. So, all in one last quick comment, Representative Ward.
I will be very quick, but I do want to say, Senator Youngbauer, that there is significant concern that projects like 212 and projects like Rock 52 were taken out of queue, benefiting certain areas of the state. And so when we look at the Rochester project and we talk about mergers on exits that are too close together and people dying and extra costs at MnDOT, when they've already gotten millions and millions and millions of dollars out of queue, is a totally different conversation than what we're having now. And then I just have to respond to Representative Ruth. I'm quite certain that Highway 14 is not nearly as dangerous as the two intersections in my district that annually rank number one and number two on State Farm Insurance most dangerous intersections in Minnesota, which are 85th Avenue and 252 and the Devil's Triangle. And we do have a solution. We have a problem, and we have a solution. And the solution is the bill that we passed already this year.
Okay, members, I think we're ready to vote. All in favor of the Youngbauer motion to delete the Ruth motion to delete Section 126, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Okay, members, I think we are ready to vote. Just wanted to make some very brief concluding comments. Again, appreciating the hard work of the staff and the conference committee and the public for taking some time out of a very, very busy day. I really, really appreciate Senator Murphy's interest in advancing this bill. And as it was, hey, I loved it. We're going to be done very soon. But I, the part I wanted everyone to hear was my words of thanks to Senator Murphy, who has just been a wonderful partner to work with both on this bill as well as the larger finance bill. I hadn't really had the opportunity to work with him and get to know him until this year, and it's been really one of the parts of the session that I'll value a lot. This bill is very important in terms of transportation policy. We have a lot of provisions that are new in terms of the environment and labor. We've come to consensus on a lot of issues that there was disagreement on, and I think we're going to be able to go with a very good product back to the House and Senate floor and get this bill passed tonight and signed by the governor. So, Senator Murphy, did you have any final comments?
Yeah, I did. First, can you tell we've been dressing out of the same closet? Kind of starting to look a lot alike. So. Mr. Chairman, and to the folks over in the House, thanks again, especially to the staff for your patience and a lot of guidance along the way. And to my conferees and the staff in the Senate, once again, you excelled all expectations. So thank you. You know, at the beginning of session, I kind of made a statement, you know, and every now and again, words fly out of your mouth, and you try to grab them and stuff them back in, and we all know it doesn't work very well, but I made the statement that if we didn't have a primary seatbelt bill, there wouldn't be a policy bill. And I think that, you know, maybe I was a little too critical at that time and had to do a lot of backtracking to get to this point. Just let me state clearly and for the record that the reason that the Senate gave up on our child passenger safety restraints, the graduated driver's license, and the seatbelt provisions is fairly simple. We swapped them out for Daimler and a few other things that were in the House bill on the condition that the House is going to have a full and complete hearing on primary seatbelt next year. Now, folks, I can't stress enough. We were just talking earlier about the loss of life on 14, on 65, on Highway 10, Devil's Triangle. We can save 30 to 50 lives in the state of Minnesota every year by moving our seatbelt law from a secondary to a primary offense and making sure that everybody in the vehicle is buckled up. And not only are we saving lives, but all the money that you've talked about on Senator Jungbauer about those intersections up there on 65 would be greatly reduced, 75% less medical cost if you're wearing your seatbelt. So what? You might get a bruise across the sternum or across the lap. At least you aren't laying out on the highway getting run over by other vehicles. I mean, and this, some of the nonsense that I hear around, especially the seatbelt, and it trickles on towards graduated driver's license and the child safety restraints, is simply that. It's childish. It's because of, Big Brother or whatever. This is not Big Brother. We have well over 300 pages of statute that mandate that we in the legislature and the state, these folks right over here in uniform, protect our citizens on our transportation system. And maybe I'll be a little grandiose and make another statement, but it's going to be a cold day next year before we not have a complete and full airing on the seatbelt issue. It will be a cold day. So everybody in the room, we need you all on board on seatbelts, graduated driver's license, and child safety restraints, because I got news for you. I'm still going to be the chair next year unless there's an act of God or the crick gets too high. And the policy in the Minnesota Senate, at least, is going to grind to a halt until we get a full and complete hearing and vote on primary seatbelts.
And with that, thank you, Senator Murphy. I hear that loud and clear. I've already had some conversations with both the Speaker and the Chair of the Public Safety Committee, even last night. I'm certainly committed to whether one agrees or disagrees. I happen to agree with Senator Murphy on this, but whether one agrees or disagrees, I think certainly public process is very important, and that's what Senator Murphy is asking for, and I think it's a reasonable request. Members, I will move that we adopt the conference committee report on House File 30. Oh, he's got to make the motion.
I got to make the motion. You can't make the motion when you got the gavel in your
hand. Oh, okay.
You got the gavel.
All the of power is kind of getting in the way.
We're legislators. We can't do two things at once. So you can't hold a gavel and make motions. Okay. But I would move that the Conference Committee on House File 1351 as amended be recommended to pass and referred back to our bodies.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you very much, members. Thank you, staff. Thank you, public. We'll get this bill in time for the